Our next speaker is Dr. Hermínia Tavares. Dr. Tavares graduated from Baynard College and UCLA.
Barnard College
and UCLA. She obtained her doctorate from UIC and in maternal and child health. Her interests are in teen fathers and community organizations, and those stem from her work in East LA with Dr. Lester Breslow and in Chicago at the Robert Taylor Projects with Dr. Susan Scrimshaw.
Hello, everyone. Just for clarity, my name is Hermínia Antonia Taveras Nieve Luisa de Jesús Rodríguez García. So I just wanted to give Leslie a break.
Thank you.
I took up 5 minutes already. Okay, so
you're fine.
My presentation today, I am just so honored to be here and be following these two wonderful researchers. It's just so consistent in terms of what we hear and what our findings in the field. I will present today on my study that was conducted for my dissertation. It's titled How Adolescent Fathers Perceive Role Changes, Exploring the Applicability of an Identity Theory.
Oh.
All right. I have no. No, that was good. You should have done it when Barry White was going to come on. I have no relationships to disclose. So I will move on, and as I was saying, this was part of my dissertation research work that I conducted in Chicago. I will touch upon all these items you see here as we go along. The main aim of the study was to examine the process of fatherhood identity formation of African American and Latino adolescent fathers from the Chicago area. We did an ethnographic content analysis of qualitative data. The main purposes were to examine the male's perceived role changes as he assimilates into this new fatherhood role, and also to determine the degree of identification with that role of father, as examined via James Marsh's theory of identity achievement, which I will go through further along. We all know that there are definitely consequences to teen pregnancy that are very severe for not only the adolescents that are experiencing it, but also for the family that are the supportive networks around. This also is heightened by the ethnic disparities that are seen in our communities as well, where African American and Latino young males are disproportionately impacted not only by teen pregnancy, but also the underemployment and also gang violence, as we heard in the earlier presentations. Equally, we heard that our program still utilized the idea of fatherhood or interventions for fathers as an afterthought. We don't normally go in and say, okay, maternal and child health, do we have to put a P in it? No, because the M signifies male as well. So the male in maternal and child health needs to be an active participant, and it needs to be actively inserted in that MCH. Definitely the significance is great it is very important to conduct research in this area because of the economic, physical, and psychological impact, as we've heard earlier. Equally, the government, in terms of learning how to create policies that are fair, that are just for the fathers. So it's definitely important to continue this research. So speaking about theoretical foundations, what theoretical foundations are out there for us to really stem from and spring our research from? That was my whole contention is, okay, what is out there? And how do we definitely capture that men do want to be involved, that adolescent boys want to be involved, but how? So I recruited James Marsh's theory of identity achievement, which he developed assessing students' commitment to an occupation or an ideology in college. So he utilized college students in order to develop this theory, where, as we see here, there's a crisis that this male person, is impacted by. And they assess their values and life choices. It moves them to assess values and life choices where they'll eventually make a commitment to that identity or the level of commitment. It's varied by 4 degrees, says James Marshall, and I'll show you as we follow. But their assessments of values and life choices are impacted by the support network that is actually protecting them or providing certain instrumental support, monetary support, different types of support. So James Marsh's theory of identity achievement was kind of neat for me to take that and say, yes, here are categories that we can utilize to determine what level of commitment is this father in. It's not that he has no commitment, but what is the level? I mean, that was my take in terms of wanting to approach this challenge. So James Marsh's theory presents 4 degrees. Diffusion, identity diffusion. He has no apparent commitments and struggles less than an individual in moratorium. There's the identity foreclosure, where the individual experienced no crisis, yet has a firm, often parentally determined commitment. So do as parents tell them to do. Then there's the identity moratorium, where the individual is engaged in decision-making with commitments vague. So he's struggling in his attempts to make a commitment. Then there's the identity achievement degree or level, where the individual has experienced a crisis period and is committed to an occupation and ideology, the ideal evolution, maturation of the ego. All other statuses are measured against this one. So here we have 4 degrees of commitment levels. So I wanted to explore, well, what are the perceptions or feelings of the teen male regarding his new role as father? And at the same time, what are the identity statuses that we find in his expression, in his narratives? What do we find that is found in this population that I am analyzing? So what are the potential predictors? Also, what are the mitigating factors associated with each role-specific stage? So if they're in the diffuse, what are the factors involved that encourage him or discourage him from being diffused or being more achieved? Does Marsh's theory... So then, after all this questioning, I want to also question, did this theory apply? Was it applicable to this population, to what I was trying to grasp? So I worked in the Discovering Adolescent Dad Social Support Project that was sponsored via Northwestern University. Dr. Virginia Bishop was the PI, where 118 young fathers aged 13 to 22 participated in the DADS project. Two-thirds were African Americans and others Latino. We interviewed young fathers, so those that were specifically either experiencing a pregnancy or had already experienced the pregnancy and birth. The one-on-one interviews were conducted in English and Spanish, some were in Spanish. Now, the subsample that I used was a smaller subset that did the one-on-one interviews. It was de-identified data, and I received it as transcripts. The data of the original source of the DAD study was conducted by trained staff, and the interviews were majority in English, and they were at a center, like a community center, or at a convenient location that the father would choose. To move it along, I don't want her to flag my time. So in the methodology, we actually utilized grounded theory. First, though, we wanted to identify the different levels that were in our data set. So how many of the dads were achieved? How many were diffused, moratorium, foreclosure? So we wanted to do that. So we operationalized these definitions and we created these super codes. Secondly, what we did was we hid the categories, we blinded the interviews again, and then we assessed, I say we, the universal we, I assessed the transcript in order to determine were there any themes that emerged in the data that lets me know, man, if we could manipulate this particular construct or this particular factor, maybe we could yield something different. So I wanted to see that, and I'm going to show you how we operationalize the supercode. So narratives that expressed a lack of investment was a diffusion status. Those that were expressing socially desirable things about themselves was foreclosure. And narratives that question what a father's supposed to do or behave was more of the moratorium degree. And then those that were really firm and frank about their commitment to the fatherhood role was definitely categorized as an achieved father. The results are as follows. This was an ethnographic sample. People are apologizing about their sample size. I will not apologize for the sample size. 27 adolescent males were interviewed. The mean age was 19, and the range was the age range was 13 to 22. Two-thirds were African-American again. 66% of these that I analyzed did not finish high school. 58 were unemployed. 54% lived with parents. And 33 lived with a partner. 92% have had one or two children, and 8% of them were expecting. So these were fathers. They had some experience with the birth and then having an actual child. So I wanted to then share with you some of the findings in terms of our first questions. What are their perceptions? What do they feel in terms of the new role of father? What was seen was that pregnancy was the catalyst for change. For them, the young males acknowledged that the need to prioritize their lives was imminent due to the increased level of responsibility associated with becoming a father. They also stated their main examples were the whole street gang involvement, how they would have to kind of decrease that involvement from being their priority. They would have to step back on it. I just saw the PI here. Hello, welcome. The majority stated that they had to deal with the crisis and appropriately strive to better identify with the idea of fatherhood. So they're all expressing the need to become more achieved. However, as we heard earlier, the most explicit regret was their inability to choose an ideal mother for their children because it was unplanned. These are teen fathers, again, and a little bit different from the population that Dr. Aloy Aleo presented, but still we hear the common themes. So to move along, what are the identity statuses that were found? So yeah, what was the distribution? How were they distributed? All identity status based on James Marsha did emerge in the data. Additional statuses also emerged for this population. However, the most common or frequent statuses were the most achieved, the identity achievers or the transitional identity achievers in this sample. And I want to share with you, because I say transitional identity achievers, transitional foreclosure, Marsha's, as you can remember, had 4 degrees, 4 identity status. And as I was sifting through the data with the supercodes, there were some interviews that I couldn't really categorize into one firm particular identity status. So what happens when that happens? They were vacillating between two identities, identity commitment or levels of commitment. That encouraged me to say, hey, I have to respect what the data is saying. There is another category. There is another degree that is emerging. It's emerging in the sample that I reviewed in the transitional achievers between the achievers and moratorium and the transitional foreclosure. Now, I did present transitional moratorium because I'm like, okay, I can't shut that out, the possibility of that existing. However, that wasn't what I found in the data. That didn't surface. However, there could possibly be more degrees of commitment levels. So to continue, I wanted to share some data exemplars, some of the narratives that lets you know what we found in the data that really coincides with the definition of the supercold. Here's a diffused. He's like, I don't want to be on lockdown. She's on lockdown, but I don't want to be locked down. Obviously does not want or has expressed his intentions. The foreclosure, as stated before, focuses on his relationship with his dad and the fact that nobody has taught him how to be a father. So again, we are seeing that how it becomes applicable with the narratives. It coincides with what our definitions were. So the moratorium, again, I can have myself, here is a conflict, and I want to share this. I'm going to read it. I can have myself having fun, but back in my mind, it is always there that I have a son, and I have to pay, and I can't give him the love that I can give him. So here's this conflict that he's going through. I'm out partying, but yet I have a son I have to take care of. The achiever, obvious. Obvious achiever. It's exactly using the words that we heard earlier. I had to step up and be a man myself. Now I have responsibilities since I'm having a child. My life has to be for that child. A clearly defined commitment. So we want to continue exploring, and I continue navigating through this data. And I was like, well, what are the predictors or the factors or the mitigating variables that we can maybe, as public health advocates, encourage others to provide or to help bolster for these young fathers? And there was the following. There were formative findings. So the constructs that Marcia proposed, which was their assessment of life values, their values and their life, did emerge, as well as the social support needs. But there were also additional patterns found in the data. There were pervasive themes that emerged from young fathers per specific identity status. So some of it was more salient for some versus others. The pattern supports a formative model of adolescent fatherhood identity achievement. I want to first apologize to the qualitative purists and at the same time also emphasize that grounded theory prevails. Here we have a table which represents, basically, we're presenting the factors that emerge in the data. Here is respect for partner as a main component or a factor. We have assessments of life value, social support, competing adolescent crisis, and the identity levels to which it was more salient for. I'm going to continue. Respect for partner was very salient for the identity achieved. Here we have some that says, man, I'm not going to read it all because it's just rated. Man, I had to send her on her way. Man, it is just so hard. It's like she ain't no mother figure. Here we have, and I want to take the liberty to say, we did find respect for partner was a curious finding because the respect for partner was very high when their involvement was very high when the mother was either an extreme failure at parenting or an exceptional mother. That's when in the data we found that the father really stepped up and say, I'm going to step up because she doesn't know how to take care of the child, or I'm going to step up because she is a brilliant woman who provides and protects. So we did find that dichotomy or that polar opposite. To continue, assessments of values and life choices was very important or very salient for the identity achieved. So the identity achieved coincides with the definition. They are thinking about life and their choices and the values, assessing what are they. Here we have the whole purpose of doing better, making goals. Social support construct to continue was important for the foreclosure and the identity achieved. And the competing roles was also relevant for the foreclosure and identity diffuse, which is interesting because they are competing with their teenage adolescents as well. So it's interesting to see that the lower degrees or the less achieved degrees are representing that struggle. There were also, the construct also was salient for social support and assessment of life value. And for these young fathers, their conversations or the narrative disclosed reliance on external social support networks and active assessment and decision making. So it was balanced in terms of what we found in the data. I want to show you the formative model of adolescent fatherhood identity achievement. Here we have, you know, the basis or the foundation of James Marsh's theory, which is a crisis, assessing life values, the values and life choices, and social support impacting it in order to make this decision or this commitment to one of those degrees. In here, we incorporated, I have express what are the different factors that are that emerge in this data set. We have the competing role of in society. So the adolescent crisis is really parallel to the pregnancy crisis that they're experiencing. And they're also assessing the values and life choices around that. Their level of respect for partner was definitely key. And I want to continue really clearly to confirm what happened in Marcia's identity theory. It identifies the degree to which one has explored commitment to an identity, and we did find that in the ethnographic study. The crisis, we also found that. We found that pregnancy is a crisis, causing teens to reevaluate the behavior. Commitment, once crisis is resolved, they have a commitment. Absolutely. In our data, they were expressing the need to commit or to change. Identity involved adoption of a set of values and ideals. The data showed them ascribing the set of values and ideals. So how did this theory, how was my findings expanding on Marcia's theory? Well, Marcia's theory did not assess a competing crisis. While in this study, the adolescent crisis was also competing with the study participants. And we also found specific mediating variables such as the ideal partner, support needs, beliefs, father's instincts, and the negative experience all came in. What's different is that the foreclosure stage, Marcia says, oh, there's no crisis, they don't identify it, but I choose to differ. In the foreclosure stage, they have experienced the crisis, but it might be buffered by the type of support system they always rely on, because the foreclosure identity relies more heavily on what the parents say, what their support structures say. So there is a buffer there. Status are not stages. I differ as well in this sample because all of them wanted to achieve to something higher. So there is a hierarchy of sorts. Some hierarchy is emerging in that data. It's not just one-dimensional. There's a link that they want to achieve better. This was developed with college students, and of course, we developed it in, we applied it in low SES and in basically teen fathers that don't have that exposure. I want to get to the findings that also emerged that were not specific to the theory, but there was an abuse violence all throughout permeating the data. More than half the study subjects disclosed act of violence by their partner. However, they called it petty fights. They said, oh, she stabbed me with a fork. Oh, but it was petty. It was just emotional, you know, all the hormones. That's their interpretation. But almost half of the subject disclosed them assaulting their partner. But these, if you look at these narratives, you say, oh, I never physically hurt her and probably one time smacked her. No, not when she was pregnant. Probably when we got into an argument. But I wanted you to focus on the last two bullets. The last two bullets is the same participant where he did not touch her. He has never hit her at all. Heavens forbid that I do what my father did to my mom. However, he got his posse to do it for him. So overall, the anecdotes that would be considered evidence of relationship violence by the researcher ranged in accountability, where in many cases subjects consider these acts not violent, not grave, or they assume very little responsibility for it. We also found that they were very quick to, they did know how to perceive emotional abuse. They categorized it as paternity is denied is one of how it's abusive, when the partner denies them the paternity, the partner limits access to their child, or the partner says, you ain't no good father, or your fatherhood skills are limited. Overall, unlike the theme of violence and aggression, they were very specific about the emotional abuse. To kind of segue into the ending, the study's strengths and limitations are as follows. We have firsthand information from young fathers. This is their own stories, their own narratives. We didn't create an instrument, but it will help us create an instrument. So the formative theory helps conceptualize the phenomenon to formulate a paradigm of intervention. So we will conceptualize, we will figure out how can we, in a larger confirmatory research trial, start. This is a basis for us to start and create some sort of screening or survey. The truth is, this is a secondary analysis of data. It's limited content analysis. Archival data sometimes is missing because it was a long time ago. Well, it was in the year 2000. Again, cross-sectional versus longitudinal. Would be nice to see what happens years later, and also how the family represents and also perceives the young father's evolution into that fatherhood role, more committed role. Researcher as instrument is always going to be a challenge. We have to be able to train our researchers that go into the field. Some have better rapport, some have less rapport. Some items they can probe better versus others, so we have to keep training them. This is a formative examination. Generalization is limited to this population. But again, it gives us a start where we can identify these constructs and kind of figure out and make solid lines and arrows indicating what influences, which factors influence the most for them to be in the more achieved identity status. To conclude, the majority were identity achievers. transitional identities were found, fatherhood takes precedence over streethood in this population. Connotational differences of violence and physical abuse should be explored further. And partner as an aggressor physically and emotionally did surface. When we talk to the partners, that it surfaced. Oh, me, never. But there is a very... it is very volatile. Conclusions, recommendations, key components to consider, relationship and negotiation skills training, include family members, other support, role models for fatherhood. They didn't identify any. The way they worked was, I didn't have a dad, but I have an idea of what I want to be. Or my dad wasn't a father, so I'm going to be the opposite of what he was to me. That was their role model perception. Male focused, a lot of programs just add them on, but we have to address his concerns, parenting, pregnancy, employment. Also assess the baseline. Don't just assume that they don't want to be involved, that all of them that walk in the door don't want to be involved. Assess, what's the baseline? Oh, where is he in his commitment level? And that behooves me to continue research. And in terms of developing some sort of screening process. Transition period, there is a transition. Also respecting that and assessing more of that, exploring that transition period from streethood to fatherhood. I want to thank my team, my committee. They were the best. They dealt with me. Virginia Bishop, who's standing back there, Dr. Bishop from Northwestern University. Say hello, the wonderful woman. Another wonderful woman is Nadine Peacock, who's sitting right there in the middle. A wonderful guidance that I received, along with Arden Handler, Susan Scrimshaw, Diana Ingram, and Mark Lepore is my current boss, and he was very supportive of this, too. Thank you very much.